I want to welcome everybody back to the this year's installments of the Women's Shi'ura. Prior to the Yom Tovim, it certainly makes sense to speak about issues that are related to Yom Tov. So today's topic, we'll talk a little bit about Rosh Hashanah. Again, I'll elaborate on what exactly about Rosh Hashanah in just a few moments. I am open as well to having a Shi'ur next week on Tzom Gedalia, if that is good with people. Okay, you can do it the same week, and presumably next week we'll speak about something having to do with Yom Kippur, just as it works out pretty well. Okay, so I want to pick up with an issue which actually we discussed a little bit about last year in anticipation of Rosh Hashanah. It's an issue which we didn't fully cover last year, and I think even the parts which will be a little bit of review are still worthwhile, because it could just well be that here and there not everybody remembers every single detail from the Shi'ur last year. It's just maybe possible, you know, such a thing is true. So the topic for today's Shi'ur is we're going to analyze together the three unique brachos that are recited as part of the Shemoneh Esrei of Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, the brachos, the blessings of Malchus, the Chronos, and Shofros, the blessings that talk about God's kingship, that talk about the idea of God remembering, and focus on the idea of Shofar. So to really get the most out of this year, it's worthwhile to follow along in the Machzor, and fortunately we have a bunch of Machzorim. For anyone who wants to follow along, we'll be starting on page 454, and then flipping through a little bit. First of all, just a little bit of background. We know that the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah is actually the longest Musaf, the longest Shemoneh Esrei of the entire year. Even if you daven at a moderate pace, it probably takes you a good 15-20 minutes to be able to say the entire Shemoneh Esrei of Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Is just, there's an incredible, huge number of words that a person just has to say in order to get through it. And as we'll see, very, very important ideas that are contained within the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. There's a Rashi on Chumash, where Rashi indicates that the recitation of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros on Rosh Hashanah is actually a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's actually a mitzvah that comes from the Torah itself. The Ramban right away is critical of Rashi. We know that in general, all of the prayers that we have, certainly, you know, the format of the Siddur, the way we have it, was instituted by the rabbis. It was created by the rabbis. We don't generally assume that the text of davening is somehow d'oraisa, that it somehow comes from the Torah itself, but apparently what Rashi holds is that these brachos of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros are unique. They're not just another part of davening. In a sense, Rashi apparently holds that these brachos are interpretations of the Shofar. We know that Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros are recited in conjunction with the sounding of the Shofar. Those of us who daven the Nusach Ashkenaz, you know, all of us certainly have the shofar blown during the Chazaras Hashas, during the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, in conjunction with Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. Those of us who daven Tzfar, who daven Tzfar Shuls, know that in addition to that, they also blow the shofar during the Shilas Shemoneh Esrei, the Silas Shemoneh Esrei, during the brachos of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. Either way, apparently the function of these brachos is tied in with the blowing of the shofar in a very, very integral fashion. And these are not just tfilos, these are not just regular prayers, a regular blessing. These are actually, as we said before, interpretations of what the shofar is meant to convey. In a sense, if one were to blow the shofar without saying the Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros, you'd, on some level, just be blowing a horn without really explaining what the shofar is meant to convey. So that seems to be what Rashi is saying, that the brachos of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros are daraisa, the Torah obligation, because they're part of the very obligation of blowing shofar itself. Each bracha contains at least 10 psukim, 10 verses from Tanakh. And unfortunately, when we daven, we tend to kind of run through these psukim because, you know, okay, they're verses, you know, and the extent to which we get into the psukim when we're davening is to the extent to which the psukim can serve as the basis of the song. Either a song that already was written for the psukim, Havenga, here we have Ephraim, beautiful song, or some other song that somebody shoehorns into one or more of the psukim to try to make them sound nice. But we oftentimes don't really focus on the psukim themselves. We tend to be caught up with some of the other tefillos of Rosh Hashanah. And there's a certain irony in that many of the tefillos of Rosh Hashanah, which are near and dear to us, were really composed later on in history, and they're not such an integral part of the davening, fundamentally speaking. Right, take an example, Unisana Tokas. Right, everybody shivers when they say Unisana Tokas. But Unisana Tokas, for all of its passion and grandeur of all of that, is a later addition to the davening. And if you talk to somebody who's a real Sardi, who never davened in an Ashkenazi shul, and you talk about Unisana Tokas, even if you talk about Unisana Tokas, he won't know what you're talking about, because they don't say it. It's not part of their davening. So here's something that for us, Ashkenazim, is so central, and everybody's crying and chuckling and all of that. And if you're from the Sardi world, it's just not part of the Rosh Hashanah experience, because again, it's not an integral part of the davening in the same way. The Chol Ma'aminim, you know, again, all of these prayers, which again, tug on the heartstrings, and they're beautiful, beautiful tefillos. If you really look at what's most important to the davening, these psukim, these forgotten psukim of the Malchiyot Zichronos and Shofros, are actually much more fundamental and much more essential to the davening on Rosh Hashanah than all of these piyutim, all of these poems, no matter how emotional and passionate these piyutim happen to be. So let's take a look just at the format in general of these psukim, and then we're going to talk about these psukim as really a key to understanding what the shofar is all about, and perhaps to what Rosh Hashanah as a whole is all about. The psukim are divided in each case into three psukim from Chumash, three psukim from Tehillim, three psukim from Navi, and then there's a concluding pasuk from Chumash to round out the ten. So that's going to be the format we're going to see in each of these brachos. Again, three psukim from Chumash, three psukim from Tehillim, three psukim from Navi, and then one pasuk in Chumash to end off everything. Let's start on page 454 with the bracha of Malchus. So the bracha of Malchus talks about God's kingship, and clearly that's one of the important themes of Rosh Hashanah, and apparently one of the important themes of the shofar. What the bracha of Malchus tells us is that part of what the shofar is supposed to convey is that God is the king. That's, you know, the same way that when the king comes in, we blow trumpets, you know, to herald the arrival of the king. So too, when the king is making his presence known to us on Rosh Hashanah, we blow shofar as a herald of sorts in order to acknowledge the fact that he's come. So Malchus opens up with the famous tefillah of Aleinu. Many people don't realize that Aleinu was actually written originally for the Malchus, which we say on Rosh Hashanah, and it was only afterwards that Aleinu was taken out of the Rosh Hashanah davening, and it was considered to be such a beautiful tefillah that it was stuck on at the end of every davening which we do, but its original place is really part of the Malchus. So we recite Aleinu, and then on page 456 we begin with the recitation of Sukkah. We say in the second line, Ki Amalchus Shelchahi, kingship is yours, you will reign forever in glory. And here we have pasuk number one, Hakasuv Desarosecha, as it says in your Torah, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Vor, right? God will be the king forever and ever. And then we say the following, the Ne'mar, the second pasuk, Lo Hidit Oven B'Yakov V'lo Ra'a Amal B'Yisrael. He gazes at no iniquity in Jacob. He sees no evil schemes in Israel. I'm reading from the Article Translation. Hashem Elokav Imal. Hashem, his God, is with him. Usruas Melech Bo. And the Trua of the king is together with him. The author of this pasuk, or the one who said this pasuk, and the author ultimately is God, But the one who said this pasuk is Bilam HaRasha. When Bilam gazes out at the Jewish people, and he's just dying to curse them, and instead all of these blessings come out of his mouth, one of the things that he says is this pasuk. What does this pasuk mean? So, what's relevant to us is the end of the pasuk. Hashem Elokav Imo, Hashem, his God, is with him, with the Jewish people. Usruas Melech Bo. The word Shrua is most familiar to us in Rosh Hashanah, because, of course, we think of the sound of Shrua, which is associated with the blowing of the shofar. But most of the commentaries over here explain that the word Shrua in this context is related to the word Reus. Reus means friendship. That's one of the things we bless the chassan and kala with. Ahava, v'achva, v'shalom, v'reus. Right? So reus means friendship. And here, Bilam HaRasha makes a rather interesting statement about God's relationship with the Jewish people. Shruach melech bo. The Jewish people have a relationship of friendship, of shrua, with the king. Now right here, even before we've gotten too deep into the Pesukim of Malchus, this Pesuk of Malchus is making a startling assertion about the nature of kingship, of God's kingship, and our relationship to God as a king. Most people, when they describe the feeling that they have towards a king, would not say, "He's my friend." There's a lot of other things you would say about the king, but, you know, King so-and-so, my BFF, is not usually the term that would come to mind, right? King and friend are two very different things. King is scary. What's that? Right, we'll get to Moshe Lamelech, the Ezra Hashem, again in just a few minutes. So, there's something incredible about the relationship Klal Yisrael has with the Ribbono Shel Olam, something that even strikes Bilam HaRasha, that on the one hand, God is our king, but on the other hand, he's our king / friend. He's our friend who's the king. It's not a normal king-subject relationship where we're petrified of the king, where we want to try to, you know, make sure that the king doesn't catch us doing anything wrong or anything of that nature, right? God is our king and he's our friend all at the same time. You know, they tell an interesting story about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichever, who's the great Chassidish Rebbe, who was always looking for ways to be melamed chus, to see the goodness in the Jewish people. So they say, but Rabbi Levi Yitzchak once on Erev Pesach in the late afternoon asked his gabbai to go around the Jewish neighborhood and bring him any chametz that anybody had. He said it's imperative that if you have any chametz, you have to bring it to me. And this is Erev Pesach late in the afternoon. The gabbai comes back after scouring the town and says, Rebbe, you know, I tried really hard, but I couldn't find a single morsel of chametz anywhere in the town. So the Rebbe says to the gabbai, okay, second mission, go back and bring me contraband. I think he said tobacco. Right? Tobacco at that time was something that you weren't allowed to possess. So, you know, an hour later he comes back, he has a full box of all the contraband that he gathered up, you know, from all the people in the town. So the Levi Yitzchak raises his eyes to heaven and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, look at your Jewish people. You know, here the Tsar has, you know, soldiers and, you know, policemen and the like, and yet, you know, this earthly king, people, you know, take the risk, you know, rightly or wrongly, and they hold on to contraband, to stuff that they're not really supposed to have, according to government law. And the Ribbono Shel Olam has no policemen, he has no sentries, he has no soldiers running around, and comes Erev Pesach in the late afternoon, and he asks a Jew, could you produce for me a morsel of chametz? And our relationship with God is such that no Jew, you know, even without all of the police and without all of the soldiers and whatnot, no Jew would think to possess a morsel of chametz late Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Mika Amcha Yisrael, who's like the Jewish people? In some level, that's what the Pasuk is bringing about over here. Usruas Melech Bo. Right? God is our king, but we have that kind of friendly relationship where, forget about God punishing us. We don't want to let our friend down, our friend, quote unquote, you know, and do something that would go against him. Next Pasuk, where again, we speak about the idea of God's Malchus. The Nehemiah Vayhi Vishulun Melech is Hasef Rosh Ha'om Yachad Shifte Yisrael. God was king in Yishurun among the Jewish people when the heads of the people came together and all of the tribes united. Here the Pasuk again is telling us something incredible to reflect upon on Rosh Hashanah. When do we truly merit having God as our king and having this relationship of friendship with God? When we create a bond of friendship between ourselves. When we are together, then God can truly serve as that melech / friend that God is supposed to be. If we're disunified, if we're, you know, we don't have a sense of achdus within Klal Yisrael, then we can't really merit having God as our king in the fullest sense of the term. Right? So these tukim, besides just, you know, they're not merely quotations. Oh, let's see how many times we can find the word melech in Tanakh and, you know, quote all of these tukim. Each pasuk brings out a different aspect of God's Malchus. We turn our attention to the second section of the tukim of Malchus, the tukim from Tehillim. Of the Divrei Kodshich HaKosuv Lemar, Ki Lashem HaMelucha U'Moshel Bagoyim. Right? Sovereignty is Hashem's, and He rules over nations. So this pasuk is very significant because, as I mentioned before, of a thought from the Vilna Gaon, where the Vilna Gaon says there's a difference between a melech and a moshel. Melech means a king, a moshel means a ruler. Ostensibly, they mean the same thing. Said the Vilna Gaon, a melech, a king, is somebody who rules by consent of the people. A moshel is a despot who rules without their consent. Ki Lashem HaMelucha, for us, God is a melech, U'moshel Bagoyim, but at least right now, for the nations of the world who don't really recognize God's sovereignty, He's a moshel, He's so to speak a despot, somebody who rules without really having the consent of the nations of the world. Right, so these psukim, these middle psukim in Tehillim, bring out that aspect of, that other aspect of God's sovereignty. Yes, we the Jewish people enjoy a relationship of Truas Melech, where God is not only our king, but our friend, so to speak. We willingly accept the sovereignty of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But Moshel Bagoyim, right now, the nations of the world experience God as a Moshel, as someone who rules over them, you know, even though they don't necessarily appreciate the fact that He's a Moshel. I just want to skip into the next series of Sukkim from Nevi'im, the next paragraph, Al Yidei Avodecha Nevi'im Kosuv Lemar, where the Sukkim from Nevi'im bring out an incredible transformation. There we say, looking in the third line, the Nemar, it says, we look forward to the messianic future where the Olu Moshim Behatziel Mishvotis Har Esav, saviors will go up on the mountain of Siam to judge the mountain of Esav. In other words, when Moshiach comes, all of those forces in the world which represent Esav, which represent a denial of God, which represent a denial of the special Jewish task and mission that we have to bring God to the world, those elements will be judged. V'haysal Hashem HaMelucha. And then Melucha, kingship, will belong to Hashem. I don't understand. Doesn't sovereignty already belong to Hashem? So the answer seems to be based on the Vilna Gaon that was just quoted a few moments ago. Right now, vis-a-vis the Jewish people, God is a Melech. But vis-a-vis the nations of the world, God is a Moshel. God is someone who rules without their real consent, without their real buy-in. When the Olam Moshim Ba'asiyon, at the end of time, when those elements of Esav in the world are judged, V'haysal Hashem HaMelucha, so then God will be recognized as the Melech by the nations of the world as well. Sovereignty will belong to God, not only from the perspective of the Jewish people, but from the perspective of the non-Jews as well. Melucha, will be something that they will acknowledge. And this is brought out in the next pasuk, a pasuk which we say at the end of Aleinu every day. V'ne'emar, it says further, V'hoya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. God will be a king over the entire world. Meaning to say, at the end of days, not only will the Jews recognize the sovereignty of God, the non-Jews will recognize God's sovereignty as well. Right, remember we said that the format of Malchus is three psukim from Chumash, three psukim from Tehillim, three psukim from Navi, and then a concluding pasuk from Chumash. So this is the concluding pasuk from Chumash, a pasuk everybody knows. Uvisaras chakasud leimar, in Yitzhara it says, saying, Shema Yisrael Shem Alkein Hashem Echor. Right? Don't need to translate that one. Right? So Shema Yisrael is a very beautiful pasuk, but what's it doing over here in Malchus? It's interesting, right? It doesn't even use the word Melech in the pasuk Shema Yisrael, so isn't this a poor candidate for a pasuk that talks about Malchus? And the answer lies in a Rashi on Chumash. Right, this Rashi is famous because it's a Miami Boys choir song. Right, so what's the Rashi? It could be famous because it's a Rashi also, but it happens to be it's a Miami Boys choir song. Right, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What does that mean? So everybody knows, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Says Rashi and Chumash, no, that's not what it means. What does Rashi and Chumash say? Shema Yisrael, listen, O Israel, Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem, Shehu Elokeinu Ata, Hashem, who right now is our God, the God of the Jewish people, who also in the future, he's going to be Hashem Echad, he will be recognized as the one and only God by all of the nations of the world. That's what Rashi writes on Chumash. That's what you're saying every time you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You're acknowledging not only the fact that God is one, but you're also, according to Rashi, acknowledging the fact that there will come a time where the nations of the world will acknowledge the oneness and the special nature of Hashem, even though right now it's only we, the Jewish people, who really fully acknowledge that. So Miami Boys Choir song. Really? No, more recent. Okay. So, whatever. It's there. You can check it out. You don't have to take my word for it. Right? So in light of this Rashi, we understand why Shema Yisrael is the concluding pasuk of Malchus. Because the truth is, the whole theme of Malchus is that God is our king. We, the Jewish people, have this special relationship with God. Right now, that's a special relationship that only we, the Jewish people, enjoy with God. But there will come a time where everybody is going to have that relationship, and everyone is going to appreciate the fact that Hashem is a Melech. In six words, the Pasuk Shema Yisrael sums up this entire idea. Hashem, who right now is Elokeinu, Hashem will one day be Echad and recognized by all of the nations of the world as being a Melech. So you don't need the word Melech in the Pasuk Shema Yisrael to bring out this idea. The very concept behind Shema Yisrael is the notion that there's going to be a wider recognition of God's sovereignty and God's uniqueness. But we're going to have to wait a little bit in history for that time to ultimately come. Right? So that in a nutshell is Malchus. And what Malchus brings out is that when we hear the shofar blown, you know, just to encapsulate this in very, very, you know, terse kinds of terms, when we hear the shofar blown, we think about the fact that God is king. We think about the fact that God is a quote-unquote friendly king. He's a king with whom we have a friendly relationship. And we think about the idea that although right now not everybody recognizes God as king, that day will come. Right? That's all the commentary on the blowing of the shofar that Malchus is providing us with. So we turn our attention to Zichronos, which is on page 458. Zichronos, in the first three paragraphs of Zichronos, the theme of Zichronos is actually a very scary one. Zichronos, which literally means remembrances, starts off touching on the idea that no one can escape the scrutiny of Hashem. God is zocher, that he remembers, in the sense that nobody is anonymous. God knows everyone, he sees everyone, and, you know, most scary on Rosh Hashanah, he judges everyone in accordance with his or her actions. This is really the focus of, you know, much of what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Atu zocher ma'asei olam. You remember everything that ever happened since the beginning of the world. L'fanecha nigalu kol ta'alumos. All of the hidden secrets are revealed before you. Ki ein shichacha l'fnei chisei chvodecha. There is no forgetfulness before your throne of glory. Atu zocher es kol ha'mifal. You remember everything that was ever done. Hakol goloi v'yodu l'fanecha Hashem Elokeinu. Everything is revealed before you. Right? And then we say, by the way, at the end of that paragraph, an interesting line, which is subject to considerable discussion in the Gemara and among the medieval commentaries. Zehayom chilas ma'asecha zikaron liyom rishon. Article translates, this day is the anniversary of the start of your handiwork, a remembrance for the first day. So here we're just going to digress for a moment or two and just talk about one of those things that everybody knows, but like most things that everybody knows, is not entirely accurate. Right? Okay. When was the world created? Right. All right. Yeah. Right before Rosh Hashanah. Right. Man was created on Aleph Tishrei. Chaf Hei Elul was the beginning of the 6 days of creation. Aleph Tishrei was the creation of man, and presumably this line we just read, Zehayom Chilas Ma'asecha. This is the day of the beginning of your handiwork. Zikaron Liyom Rishon, it reminds us of the first day. It's basically a way of saying, today is the anniversary of the birth of the world, mankind, you know, but it's some kind of reference to the fact that God created the world on or around the beginning of Tishrei. The problem is that there's a debate in the Gemara about when God actually created the world. There's one opinion that says he created the world in Tishrei. A second opinion says that he created the world in Nisan. And it actually seems from the Gemara that the Gemara accepts the opinion that God created the world in Nisan, not in Tishrei. Okay, so there goes everything we ever taught any preschool kid ever. Right? In other words, the world and mankind were not created in Tishrei. They were created maybe the end of Adar, leading up to Nisan. So, if that's the case, then again, it's not clear that that's the case, but that certainly seems to be what the Gemara is saying, and certainly is the position of some of the medieval authorities. What do you do with this line in the Davening? Zehayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. This is the day on which the beginning of your creation took place. No, it isn't. You should say this like around Pesach time. So, explain many of the Rishonim, the rabbinic authorities, that what we actually mean in this line is this is the day on which you begin to judge your creatures. This is the day on which you begin to judge everything that you have created. It's the beginning of your handiwork from a judgment point of view. We're not necessarily saying that the world or that mankind was created on Rosh Hashanah, but Rosh Hashanah, everybody agrees, is the beginning of the judgment against the world, you know, and against everything that God has created. That's arguably what this line over here means. Right? So again, it's certainly not the way article translates it. This day is the anniversary of the start of your handiwork. Anniversary implies that we're thinking back to when the world was created, but again, it's not 100% clear that this line actually means that. It could be just talking about the judgment of God. God's judgment, just to jump back into Zichronos, God's looking at the world, and his scrutiny of the world, his judgment of the world is not only limited to individuals, but it applies to communities, to countries, to nations. That's the next paragraph. V'al hamedinos lo ye'omer, regarding countries, it said on this day, Ezo l'cheres, where there's going to be a war. Ezo l'shalom, which country is going to have peace. Ezo l'rav, Ezo l'sova, where is there going to be famine, where is there going to be plenty. Right? Individuals are scrutinized on this day to decide who's going to live and who's going to die. It's a very Very, very scary parables that we just read. But then when we turn our attention later on to the Zichronos, we find that all of the psukim, which are quoted in the Zichronos on page 460, all talk about how God remembers people who did good, how God remembers a covenant that he made with the Jewish people, and how God remembers us for good. But we start off talking about Noah. Even Noah, who wasn't Jewish but was a good person, you know, and probably thought after a year of being in the Teva and the Ark, you know, gee, is this ever going to end? Am I ever going to get out of here, you know, being locked up with a bunch of wild animals for a year? You know, couldn't have been fun, right? So Noach is wondering, am I ever going to get out of here? So the first pasuk we read, Vayizkar Elokim es Noach, God remembered Noach, and he caused the flood waters to recede. And then we read about how God remembered the Jews in Egypt, Vayishmael Elokim es Nakosam, Vayizkar Elokim es Brisos, Avram es Yitzchak v'yes Yaakov. And then we read about how God is going to remember the Jewish people even after we've gone into Golos, and even after we think that it's hopeless, we're never going to come back to Israel, we're never going to be redeemed. No! The Zochayti is Bishi Yaakov, the Yafis Bishi Yitzchak, the Yafis Bishi Avram, Eskar. I will remember all of the covenants which I made with the forefathers. I will remember Eretz Yisrael, Ha'aretz Eskar. And then we have some beautiful psukim, again, as we keep jumping through, I'm going to run through somewhat quickly, but with the Nevi'im, Yirmiyahu tells the Jewish people, Zochayti lo chesed ne'urayich avas k'lulosayich, I remember the love that I had for you in your early days as a nation. Havein yakirli Ephraim, ki nidei dagri bo zocher es kirenu od. Hashem says, the more I talk about Ephraim, about the Jewish people, the more I yearn for him, the more I remember him. And consistently throughout the second half of Zichronos, we talk about how remembering is something which is beneficial to us. And if you think about it, there's really a very marked contrast between the beginning of the bracha and the latter part of the bracha. In the beginning of the bracha, when God remembers, we want to watch out. Right? In the beginning of the bracha, when God remembers what we did, you know, it's about God scrutinizing us, looking at our actions, and you know, trying to decide whether we're deserving or we're not deserving. It's a very scary fact that God remembers us. And then we get to the second half of the bracha, and all of the psukim which we quote are all exactly the opposite. When God remembers us through the psukim that are cited over here, it's always for good. It's always that, you know, God is aware of some difficult situation we're going through, but will redeem us from it. He will remember us and take us to a good place. How did we go from God remembering us in a way which is to our detriment to God remembering us in a way which is to our benefit, you know, which is ultimately positive? I think ultimately the answer is, the point of this bracha is, God cares. And when you care, I mean, as anyone, certainly as a parent knows, anyone involved in any kind of, you know, loving relationship knows, when you care, that sometimes means that the object of your caring can be in trouble, but it can also mean that the object of your caring can experience, you know, a tremendous amount of goodness and benefit from your caring. The worst thing is when somebody doesn't care at all, but they don't remember, they don't, you know, they ignore you, they have nothing to do with you. God's caring for us, in a sense, is a double-edged sword. You know, it means that he is going to hold us accountable for our actions, that we can't just do whatever we want and God's not going to look at us. But on the flip side of things, that very same caring is to our benefit, because God will redeem us and, you know, remember, he'll never forget us, no matter, you know, what we're going through in life. He'll always kind of reach out and pull us in, precisely because he cares and he doesn't forget.
And maybe
the beginning of it. Right. Well, it's not negative. It's not negative per se, but it's just scary because
we are projecting our life.
Right. Because we're not quite sure how the scrutiny. Right. We're not quite sure what the scrutiny is going to yield. Right. But it's a very different feel at the beginning of the bracha than to the end of the bracha. The end of the bracha is God remembers us and He's going to save us. He's going to help us and all of that. But we have to realize that the two go together. Right. We have to remember the two go together. In other words, it's all about God's caring. When you care, you remember. So, you know, when you care, you yell at the person when they're doing something wrong. You maybe punish the person when they're doing something wrong. But at the same time, you help the person and you extend love to the person. It's all a package. It all goes together. Right, right. Just try to remember everything you did. Unfortunately, we know what we did.
So even when we get punished for good.
Right. But part of what Zichronos does is to remind us of that. And there's a key line in the middle of Zichronos, which is also a song. So, you know, I think there are more songs associated with davening and Rosh Hashanah. Right? But at the very, very bottom of 458, Ashrei Ish Shelo Yishkachecha, fortunate is the person who doesn't forget you, Hashem. Uven Adam Yisamet Bach, and the person, the human being, who derives his strength through you. In other words, this whole bracha, we've been talking about how God remembers us. But you know, it's a two-way street. If we want God to really remember us in the fullest fashion, we have to not forget God. Ashrei Ish Shelo Yishkachecha. You want a relationship to be in place. You know, you have this person in your life who's sending you a card every birthday for 30 years, and you never send that person a card. At a certain point, it's not a good relationship, you know? I mean, it has to be a two-way street. At least send them a text, you know? It's not a card. An e-card, something. Right, we're talking about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers us, but fortunate is the person who doesn't forget you. That's what we're supposed to remind ourselves as well during this Zichronos. God cares about us. He cares enough about us to judge us, but He also cares enough about us to redeem us. Let's not forget Hashem. That's all the message of Zichronos, and we're supposed to be thinking about that during the blowing of shofar as well. Finally, let's turn our attention to shofar. Yes. So, in other words, the shofar reminds us that we have a relationship with God. Right? In other words, a caring relationship with God, and it urges us to work on our end of the relationship. Ashrei Ish Lo Yishkachecha. You know, God isn't forgetting you. Right. Right. But in other words, you know, the Malchus, yeah, there's a friendship aspect to it, but it's still somewhat impersonal. Zichronos makes it very personal. This is that God cares about us, and we have to try to foster that relationship. Finally, Shofros. So, on the surface, what the Psukim and Shofros do is they reference the shofar in various different times in Tanakh. So, you know, the first couple of Sukkim on page 462, which are from Chumash, all speak about how the shofar was sounded at Har Sinai. And then, skipping forward a little bit, the middle paragraph on page 464, the Sukkim from Navi, all speak about how the shofar is going to be blown when Moshiach comes, right? Also some great songs. V'hoya v'yom ahu, yitaka the shofar gadol uvoha ovdim beretz ashur v'anidachim beretz Mitzrayim. On that day, the great shofar is going to be sounded when Moshiach comes, and all of the people who are lost in the exile are going to come streaming back to Eretz Yisrael. So the shofar is with Har Sinai, the shofar is with, Moshiach, with Geula. Very, very nice. But what's the common theme? So Soloveitchik Zatzal explained that what Shofros is bringing out, the Baruch Shofros is bringing out about the Shofar, is that the Shofar is always the vehicle of Gimli Shechina, of the revelation of God's divine presence. I mean, the ultimate Gimli Shechina in history was Mind at Har Sinai, when the Torah was given at Har Sinai, the ultimate future Gilui Shechina, revelation of God's divine presence, is when Mashiach is going to come. The Seder of Salvation is very, very beautifully, if you, you know, a lot of the real focus of Shofros is the top paragraph on page 464, which is the three psukim from Tehillim. Right? What are those three psukim? Elokim and Hashem, two names for the Ribono Shel Olam, they rise up, you know, with the sounding of the shofar. With the sound of trumpets and the shofar, we praise, we shout out before Hashem, the King. Sound the shofar on the Rosh Chodesh, which is Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the month. It is a law for the Jewish people. It's a source of judgment for the God of Yaakov. The role of these three psukim from Tehillim is to tell us that Gilui Shechina is not something limited to ancient history when the Torah was given. It's not something limited to the distant future when Moshiach comes. We can experience Gilui Shechina in the here and now. And that's what the psukim and Tehillim are meant to bring out. Right? The psukim and Tehillim don't speak about the future or the past. They just say God is manifest whenever the shofar is blown. In a sense, what Shofros is telling us is that we can have an experience somewhat akin to the revelation of the Torah at Har Sinai and somewhat akin to the coming of Moshiach when we're just standing in shul on Rosh Hashanah listening to the blasts of the shofar. It doesn't have to be the past, it doesn't have to be the future. We can have at least an element of that Gilui Shechina, of that revelation of God's presence right here in the present. And here comes something very, very fascinating. So, again, we said that there are three psukim from Tehillim. So let's count them, right? Let's see if we're correct over here. First paragraph on 464. The Divrei Kasher Chakasav Leimar, Hola Elokim Besu Hashem Bekol Shofar. That's pasuk number one. The Neemar Bechasosus Bekol Shofar Hariel Tnei Amelach Hashem. That's pasuk number two. The Neemar Tiku Vachod Shofar Bekesor Yom Chageno Kichog LeYisrael Hu Mishpat Levakei Yachol. That's pasuk number three. But hey, we're only halfway through the paragraph. The Neemar, and it says, etc., etc., etc. We quote the entire last parak of Tehillim, chapter 150 of Tehillim. And here, Ezra Soloveitchik, wait a minute, I don't get it. Right? First of all, that's a fourth passage. That's not even a pasuk. You quoted the whole parak, the whole chapter of Tehillim. So good. It's a wonderful song also. I mean, it's very good for the Chazanim. But that's the only reason they stuck it in there. It's just for the Chazanim, that the Chazanim should have something to say. Well, it doesn't seem like Chazal would be interested in that. Was it? Six took it, right? Right, just there. So first of all, what are we doing with this Perek? Because we already quoted three Psukim from Tehillim. And it's kind of over. It's overkill. Thank you. Right? All you had to do was quote the Pasuk about Shofar. Right, there's one pasuk in there. Halu b'shek ha-shofar, halu b'nevo v'chinah. So just quote that pasuk. What do you have to quote the whole parak for? We quoted the whole parak. Every time that we were going to quote a pasuk in Shmoneh Esrei, we'd really be there forever on Rosh Hashanah. We'd be standing there a day and a half just in Musaf of Shmoneh Esrei alone. So what's this doing here? The Seder Soloveitchik as follows. This parak is not one of the three psukim from Tehillim that are part of Shofros. We did that already. This parak serves a different function. The shofar brings us into the presence of God. Right? The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that the shofar creates an experience like being in the Kodesh HaKodoshim, like being in the Holy of Holies itself. When we blow the shofar, we feel the presence of God. It's the sense of Gilui Shechina, the imminence of the Ribono Shel Olam. What emotion do you have when you feel God's presence in a very imminent fashion? Right? So awe, right? Trepidation, but also simcha. Siddur Soloveitchik, there's a tremendous joy that a person has when they really feel like they're in the presence of Hashem. That's the Pasuk says in Chumash. I mean, we quote it all the time. It's also a song, but we don't always pay attention to it. V'samachta l'fnei Hashem Elokecha. You should rejoice before Hashem. Being in the presence of Hashem is the ultimate simcha. So what's this perek? This perek is our singing shira to the Ribbono Shel Olam because we feel that we're in His presence. This has nothing to do with the rest of the shofar. That's why we quote the whole perek. The whole perek is an ecstatic expression of our joy at being in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's a message of shofros as well, right? And the message of shofros as conveyed through the shofar is when we the shofar is supposed to make us feel God's presence, and God's presence is supposed to make us happy. So Siddur Soloveitchik, look at what the shofar does. Ordinarily, the shofar starts off being an instrument which conveys awe and fear. Right? The Navi says in Amos, "In taka shofar bo'ir va'am lo yecherodu." Is it possible for the shofar to be blown in the city and the people not to tremble? That the shofar on one level is supposed to inspire in us a certain degree of trepidation, of fear, of awe at what's going on. But that very same shofar then instills in us a sense of happiness, of joy. Because we're not supposed to have a relationship with God which is just about fear and trembling. That's part of it. But ultimately the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is supposed to be about simcha. It's supposed to be about happiness. Simcha, right, 100%, right. But even on Rosh Hashanah, there's that element of simcha which is there. And that Siddur Soloveitchik is the pshat in the last paragraph we have here. Elokeinu v'elokei avos seinu, right? We finish up Shofar with saying as follows, right? Have the Shofar God elokeinu seinu, sound the Shofar, bring us back to Eretz Yisrael, restore the Beis HaMikdash, and then the last pasuk from Chumash, which we say as part of the Shofar, is uv'yom simchaschem uv'moadeichem uv'roshei chasheichem. In the Beis HaMikdash, on days of joy, on your holidays, on Rosh Chodesh, uskatem b'chatzotzros, alolosechem yalzivchei shalmeichem, you should sound the chatzotzros, the trumpets, in the Beis HaMikdash. And many of the medieval commentaries ask the question, isn't this an inappropriate pasuk to quote? It doesn't say anything about shofar, it talks about chatzotzros, it talks about trumpets. Trumpets are not a shofar, a shofar is not trumpets. What are you mixing the two together? Explains for Soloveitchik what the pasuk here is bringing out, which is so incredibly important, is the idea of Yom Simchaschem, on the day of your joy. Blowing an instrument, be it a shofar or chatzotzros, is an expression of joy. And if we walk away from shofar just feeling frightened, or just feeling that sense of trepidation, we're not getting the entire message of the shofar either. Part of the message of the shofar is a message of joy and happiness that we're privileged to be in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if we had to sum up Malchus, Sechronos, and Shofar's this commentary, this extensive commentary on shofar, what the brachos are really telling us is the following. When you hear the shofar, think about how God is the king. But think about how he's our friend as well. Think about how one day the entire world is going to recognize him. Think about how God cares for us. He cares enough about us to punish us. He cares enough about us to save us. Try to make good on your end of the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Remember that shofar is a way of revealing God's presence, not only in the past and in the future, but in the present as well. And remind yourself that when you are in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that should evoke in you the greatest amount of joy that you can possibly have, because the biggest simcha one can have in life is to be in the presence of Hashem. That's Malchus, Sechronos, and Shofros, you know, the Cliff Notes version, you know, and the condensed version. And now we have to try to take those ideas and to instill that into our listening to the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Wish I would exceed Rosh Hashanah, good to be sure. And we'll see everybody Be'ezus Hashem next week. We may do a little bit later, I'm just thinking, because the...